This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
All right, back at it here on Afternoon Drive. It's John of the Pito and Spencer German with you guys. We'll get to the Browns and the schedule game coming up in about 20 minutes or so. Expectations for that. Will they feel the need to give us more national games with Shedeur Sanders on the roster? We'll dive into that more in about 20 minutes or so. Right now, we're still breaking down what happened with the Cavs last night. And I don't know what the real problem with this Cavs team is. Maybe, Spencer, it is two guards, it is two bigs, and we always have an issue. But how important is being tough to you? Because I keep thinking about a conversation I had earlier in the week with Nick, and I try to size up the Cavs versus other teams that we perceive to be tough. And it's like, only guy on Boston I can come up with that is necessarily tough, and you can debate whether he actually is or isn't tough, is Porzingis. Like, it's not like Boston is littered with a bunch of tough guys, and they're your reigning NBA champs.
You don't think Drew Holiday's tough?
Please, if Drew Holiday's your enforcer, your goon, you have issues.
I think there's also a distinction that needs to be made between, like, having an enforcer and having like a team overall that can like play with a different intensity level. I think Drew Holiday fits that. I'm not saying Drew Holiday is the guy who's like out here hip checking guys and like get, you know, being an irritant, but I just think his style of play, the fact that he's a really good like defensive guard that also has carved out a nice role for himself as a scorer throughout his career, that screams somebody to me that plays at a different, like he plays at a different intensity. So I think like toughness can be defined differently. For some, it's going to be you need Kendrick Perkins out there throwing bows and like knocking guys around. And for some people, it's going to be like what the Pacers did, which was the Pacers, I guess, the only real player on the Pacers that felt like they were that enforcer role. Yeah, it was Mathurin. That was it. And he's like an undersized, like guard, like whatever. Like he, you know, he's not anybody that's like really that imposing.
He's really annoying.
It's just the fact that, I think Rick Carlisle actually had a really good quote about this. He said, like, our toughness and what makes us physical is our persistence. Like, how consistently they are in your face, pressuring the ball up the court, full court. How, on makes, they're pushing the ball up the floor on the offensive end, making you work. That is what makes them tough. So I just think toughness can be defined differently. And my thing with the Cavs is this, like, I don't know that, like, I think the Cavs can win a championship, and I've always pushed back on this, without having somebody who's just like a goon guy. Like, I don't think you need like there's plenty of teams that win championships without a true like goon player out there who's just like knocking people around. It happens. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
But you need a team that can play different styles and can, you know, go up tempo or slow the pace down. And isn't going to be bothered when they're thrown different things that kind of get them off guard or catch them off guard mentally, which is what happened in this series. They were shown something and asked to do something that they had not been prepared for all season in trying to keep up with the Pacers. And as soon as that happened, it's the exact same conversation we just had. Their identity went away. They weren't doing the things that made them great. And that was advantage Indiana.
So how much of this was Indiana and how much of this? Because I agree with a lot of the points you just made, right? Like the Indiana presented a different you know, they just hadn't seen that before. But we made the same comments with the Knicks a couple years ago. We're like, oh, they hadn't seen anybody that was that physical, right?
Yeah.
And then last year, Orlando, for instance, we made Orlando seem like they were the 96 Bulls for some reason. That series went seven games. And then we went into Boston. And it was like, well, it did Boston and you're injured at that point. What can you do? I just feel like every team in the East we run into in the postseason, we're just going to come up with another reason for why, well, this team is different for reasons X, Y, and Z. And they present a different challenge that for some reason, the Cavs just can't seem to match.
So I think that this actually just kind of came to me. I think this is interesting. I think that a couple years ago, the Knicks beat the Cavs in a physical way where it was like, oh, they just weren't ready for this.
And it was dominating Mitchell Robinson.
They just weren't ready to get pushed around more in the playoffs. I think that in the last couple years, I do think we have seen a Cavs team that can at times elevate the level of intensity they play with when it comes to certain things. I've seen Jared Allen, you know, get above guys, body guys out.
We saw DeAndre Hunter try to shove Mathurin into next week.
Max Strus was hip checking everybody and like being an enforcer. Donovan playing through an injury the way he did. Like,
but not only that, I mean, also he himself gave an elbow that should have taken a player out.
Right, and that's what I mean. Like, I think they've shown that they can match another team's physical. Enforcing physical.
Right, so part of the conversation should be closed to you.
Right. To me, I think they've shown that. I think now it's more of I think this series was about mental toughness and mental physicality. Like, not being able to hang with a team that just like ran you up and down the floor.
Why does it always seem though like we're playing their game instead of playing our game?
I think that's part of being mentally tough. Well, and skill set. That's why Jared Allen gets played out of the series because he can't run with these guys.
It feels like we're always trying to match what they do and fit to their game plan instead of being like, we won 64 games. They should be trying to match what we do.
Yeah. Well, and that was kind of the sticky point at the start of the series was like, game one didn't go your way, and then that established that Indiana got to control the tone for the series the rest of the way, especially when she had guys injured. So that's what it should have been. But, I can't fully answer that question, but I just think, like, there is Kenny alluded to this last night, like, there's a mental block that they have to get past this time of year where it's like, we need to be able to do a multitude of things. It can't just be our game all the time, even though it should be, but like they have to be able to sort of adjust on the fly and be able to handle those grueling first punches that might get thrown their way and adjust to them.
216-474 to below 92. What's the real problem with this Cavs team in your opinion? Again, 216-474 to below 92. Jason in Cleveland up next. What's up, Jason?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, man?
I wanted to give you my thought on this.
Yeah.
And you touched on it a little bit, the mental and physical toughness. I don't think you need an enforcer like a Charles Oakley where someone's going to get clotheslined. You can't do that anymore. But Rick Carlisle was exactly right. The persistence, the intensity, somebody said it on the TV. You didn't need the AI to tell you or the whatever statistics. You could tell by looking at it, but they are the most intense team in the NBA. We saw moments where the Cavs would push themselves. They'd be guarding. They'd extend their defense to where Indiana was shooting the threes from and stop it. They would not be lazy on their 3-2 defense zone rotation. But for the most part, they weren't. It was a lack of effort. It was like a lack of heart. And I'll tell you something. I know people don't want to say we don't want to change coaches. And I don't know if you can get a better coach. But somebody needs to have a conversation with Kenny Atkinson and tell him that this level of intensity is radiates from the head coach. I can tell you, Carlisle is not putting up with a lack of defensive rotation when they're going through stuff and practice stuff. I don't know what Atkinson's doing, but there's not an intensity level in him that's carrying through to his players. This team has all the talent in the world. They're just not executing. And when you don't execute, whether it's a corporation or a team, you have to look at the leadership.
All right. Thank you, Jason. I appreciate you. What do you think about Atkinson and his... I've not seen many people go at Atkinson the way that Jason just did.
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you like he should be fired or anything. I do think that in this series, though, he was outcoached in some respects. I think last night was a prime example. I don't know why he left Darius Garland out there in the last like 4 minutes of the game. I guess it was because he wanted his best player. He wanted to go down with his best players if he was going to go down. But like Darius was on one leg.
Yeah,
he was
Darius,
giving you nothing.
He had nothing.
He was giving you nothing. Like you brought it up earlier. Ty Jerome actually was making some shots last night. He hit a couple threes.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want him in there as you were now chasing with a few minutes left? That was perplexing.
After keeping Ty Jerome out for the entire first half, by the way.
Like that was perplexing to me. I it felt like... What I'll say about this series for Kenny was, like, he went from being this coach who was savvy and brilliant, and I guess in the end, he was only as good as his bench was going to be on this stage. But then it looked like he was, like, desperate for answers. He was throwing everything out there. He went with three guards at one point with Garland, and Jerome all out there on the floor.
You think
he
JB
put Jared Allen back in? It was just weird.
You think JB was smiling last night? I think about it. Everyone came up with that idea that it was Mark Jackson to Steve Kerr, and that was going to be this situation here. It was going to be JB to Atkinson. You get Atkinson wins coach of the year. Felt like everyone crowned Atkinson as this all great and all knowing coach, and JB
you
was...
You think JB was doing like the Leonardo DiCaprio pointing to the TV thing?
I think
thing?
So. I think he's like, I saw these problems a year ago. I knew this was coming. Sitting there laughing, probably having a drink or two, basking in his Detroit basketball gear.
He might have been, but at the end of the day, like it's undeniable that Kenny brought a different level to this team that just wasn't there. So I don't have doubts about Kenny being a great coach. I still think he's a great coach. Just like the team has
to me,
a lot.
It's such a make or miss league in that regard. Yeah. And so I have such a hard time putting it on the coach when they just missed a lot of shots.
He can't. At the end of the day, there's questions about. How could he have prepared them better for the pace of the Pacers?
You can have Rhett Auerbach out there. Right. It doesn't matter if you're shooting 25%
but
from three.
That's the thing. Like, it's one thing to be like, he should have prepared them better for this matchup. It's another thing, though, for them to drop off basically 10 percentage points from what their three-point percentage was in the regular season. Like, that is unfathomable. That's not on him. That's about guys just not making shots. And so he can't be out there making them for him.
So, that press conference last night had to have been something, right? Because he's such a focused... I'm not going to say intense person, but he just seems like basketball is his life.
Yeah.
And like, that's what he cares the most about. You can just tell.
The fact that he put the charge out there already to be like, we have to get better. We have guys, he didn't name names, but he's like, there are guys that have to get better. And I love the fact that he wasn't willing to call the season a success. Cause most coaches in that situation, you get asked that question. It's emotional. You just lost, your season's over. And you get asked like, would you call the season a success? And they'd be like, why are you even asking me that? Like, we won 64 games. We did all these great things. Of course it was a success. Not everything's based off a championship. Like, that would be an easy answer for him to sit there and be like, he was like, I have to be careful the way I word this, but like, I think we got better in some areas. I think certain players got better, but I can't sit here and call it a success. No, I thought that was huge.
I want to take this next. Oh, he just dropped off. Oh, I was going to take this next call, but I wanted to preface it because I wanted to enter the conversation as like, you know, three friends just having a convo. The subject line. So we have a subject line for any call that we take, right? And the subject line said, do you have to kick a dead? I think he called it a dead horse. Like, do you have to kick a dead horse? I think it's not the expression, but whatever it's what got put up there.
Beat the dead horse. Yeah.
That's what he was going for. Yeah. But you get the point. The idea was, with the Cavs, it's like, yeah, this just happened 24 hours ago.
We
get to talk about what is supposed to be a very, and what the Cavs themselves told you all day long was a very embarrassing outcome. They said they got to live in this for the entire summer, and this is about as bad as it gets. There's nothing me or Spencer, either one of us, can say today that will be worse or harsher than what the Cavs already said themselves today about this team.
Yeah.
There's not a single thing I can say that is meaner, that is more cutthroat than if you listen to Donovan Mitchell earlier today or any of these players. So if they get to say it, why don't we get to say it too?
And honestly, I think that's the right approach from them, is like, say it now, rip off the Band-Aid, don't leave anything open-ended. Well,
you get ahead of it. So
yeah. And then that allows us to change the conversation sooner. Now, you'll have to talk about it again tomorrow and beat that horse again because Nick wasn't here. So I feel bad for that caller. If he listens tomorrow, it's just going to be more of the same. But
I'm not saying you have to accept it either, right? So like earlier, I came up with this whole example from my own life where it was like the right thing to just face the music, right? But I was thinking about this more. Like, I take things to extreme sometimes, so bear with me, guys. Like, if you were to... I'm very anti-cheating. I'm going to go on the record here, okay? Anti-cheating. We're going to put that out there. Not that people are pro-cheating, but I'm very anti-cheating.
Cheating just in general or cheating, like, on your spouse?
Cheating on your spouse.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't care if you cheated on like a test in fifth grade. It doesn't bother me at all.
So, Michigan, they're okay. They're good.
No. As evidenced by the interview with Mason Graham, no, they're not okay. But the point is like, so if you cheat on your spouse, like, there's two ways you can go about it, right? If you cheat on your spouse, you can either face the music and be like, hey, I, my bad. Don't know what happened. I did it. Don't know what happened. My bad. Or number two, and the result I think that is going to end you up in more hot water, is being like, well, you didn't pay enough attention to me. This is your fault. Me cheating on you is your fault.
Or you could just go with the shaggy option and just be like, wasn't me.
Yeah, that one didn't work out for him either. But the point is that I think in those two roads, I think one of them leads you in a better spot than the other. But the reality is both responses have a chance of just being,
yeah,
I don't care. You cheated.
Yeah.
I don't care what you have to say. It doesn't matter if you approach it the right way. It doesn't matter if you're owning up to your mistake. You still made that mistake. And that's how I feel about this Cavs team. I can respect that they're like, hey, hand up, my bad. Well, you know, we stunk this series. We vow to be better. We're embarrassed for all this. While also understanding you lost in five games of the Pacers, didn't win a single home game in the second round, and this is a massive disappointment of a season.
I think that's a good analogy, honestly. I think that fits. Like, and I think that's also why it hurts for fans right now, because they have to sort of accept this. They don't maybe want to. They are going to want to move on at some point, but this is the reality of the situation. I do think it's somewhat admirable that the team is saying a lot of the same things. Like, we're not saying, like you said, we're not saying anything different than what Donovan Mitchell said. I said the exact same line about if they go 82-0 next year, nobody's going to care.
I thought you fed it
last
to Donovan
night,
Mitchell.
Last night on my postgame show that I did.
I thought you fed it to him. Did you slip him a note and say, hey, Donovan, this is the one right here?
Maybe he was listening. I don't know. That's my point. Like, it's a very fresh wound at this point. And, you know, we'll get to a point where we can change the conversation, but for now, this is what it is.
Justin in North Ridgeville. What's up, Justin?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey, Justin.
Hey, I was just telling your screener, I mean, one thing I noticed, I watched a lot of the games this year, probably a good majority of them, and I enjoyed watching them. It was fun to watch. It was fun watching them go on their big runs, everything that happened. But every single game that I watch teams get physical with the Cavs in terms of, like, say, full court pressure, like on the inbound after a made shot, I watch the Cavs struggle to even just get the ball across half court, you know, at the last possible second. And in my mind, I was thinking to myself, man, playoff basketball could get ugly with this team because they didn't ever respond well to that kind of physicality and, you know, hard play.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Justin.
And, I mean, you know, I think that's been evident the last couple of years.
Well, so I thought Max Strus, actually, I thought he had some very interesting comments earlier today in talking about the idea that the Heat series didn't help them in any sort of way. You know, because, like, you think you get into the postseason and then round one, you'll have a team be more physical against you, or you'll have a team play tougher. Whereas we approach that Heat series, and I think a lot of national people approach that as if that was like the first bye in NBA history. As if they didn't even count it.
I don't know if this is a hot take necessarily, but I'm kind of starting to be out on the play-in tournament. I know that everyone's going to point to the one year that the Heat were like in it, and then they made the finals.
You're just adding way more teams in the mix that don't belong.
But also, that makes it worse for the NBA, because if the NBA wants teams that are like the 9 seed or the 10 seed to go on a run of the finals, it just gives more. It just exposes the league more for being like the regular season doesn't matter. Like, that actually makes it worse for the league. They shouldn't want that in the grand scheme of things. But I just, like, the play-in tournament is useless to me. Like, it does. Why does a team that finishes this 10th in the conference and under 500, like, deserve a shot at actually getting into the playoffs anyway? Like, if anything, make the last four spots, like 4 through 8, make them duke it out for like the final seeding of the playoffs or something like that. But don't make it teams that have no business being in the playoffs getting a chance to just get boat raced by in the first round of the playoffs. Like, that does nothing for anybody.
It's a lot of teams. I'm acknowledging on your behalf, by the way, Mr. Buckley is hanging on, and we are not going to Mr. Buckley. That's my gift to you today. Okay,
I appreciate you
coming in.
Donovan's owning up to the way that the series went.
I'm not doing a bing bong today.
If we take Mr. Buckley, I have to own up to
This is the fan in Cleveland, not the fan in New York. Okay, I don't need to hear Mr. Buckley right now.
Although apparently he's opening his own radio station that he wants me to come be part of.
He's been for years. He's been saying that. Now he's going to give us all sorts of money to go join this radio station. I'll tell him the same thing I told him 2 years ago when he presented it to me. Don't call me. I'm not interested. I have a job. Thank you. 216-474-0092. We'll get to the Browns. Your expectations for the schedule release. It happens tonight at 8:00. And will Shador have any impact on that as well? It's Afternoon Drive right here.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Fan. It is not embargoed anymore. We've gotten the full release.
The schedule of hosts who are coming on Jake's show, by the way. Not the schedule of games,
yeah,
just to be clear.
It's the release of the schedule to talk about the schedule that's going to be released at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you not watch the NFL draft when they came out in a whole night of releasing picks and telling people where they're going to play? They then came out and was like, oh, the schedule release is on at May 14th at 8 o'clock. It's like, you did that during the draft. So if they get to do that during the draft, I get to do that during this show right here.
I think the only thing I will say, because I do enjoy the schedule release stuff.
I love it. I always thought it was one of the best days of the year.
The only thing I think is goofy is that they dedicate like a 3-hour show on like NFL Network and all these other things strictly just to talking about the schedule. I think it should just be what it is, which is let's announce it. All these teams, like creative teams,
they get all the fun videos.
They do their fun videos.
Last year it was Pete Weber with the bowling montage.
The fans, they throw it out there. The fans get to bounce around and go see like, oh, do I like this team? Do I like that team? What did my team do? And it should just be that, and we leave it where it is. Why do we need 3 hours to talk about it on like the NFL Network across the entire league? I get doing it here with your own local team, but why does it have to be a thing that gets like its own special?
They should just do 18 weeks of Shedeur Sanders doing wrist up and then giving the opponent.
It looks like, by the way,
are we not changing the game if that happens?
By the way, did you see that? I think he's trying to distance himself from the wrist up thing. Did you catch that video?
No, what happened?
There was a video of them taking like their rookie draft pick picture.
Yeah,
and they were all like, "Do something funny, huh?"
Oh yeah, we talked about that. Yeah.
And he and like Quinshon Judkins like jokingly was like this.
Yeah, well,
and
Dylan Gabriel was the odd man out.
He was trying to get him to do it, and Shedeur was like, he like wouldn't do it.
I think he had just had an awareness that it was making Dylan Gabriel really uncomfortable. Like I think that was an awareness from him to understand that in that moment that is a real. It's got a chance to have a bad look.
You know what I feel like it's going to be? I think he's going to not do it for a while. And then if he earns a starting job and he like goes out and has some like great game and like all the fans are doing it and all that, I think that's when he'll bring it.
I mean, you got Guardians players doing it now. It's kind of taken over everywhere. He doesn't even
have
to do it.
Is it even his anymore?
He doesn't even have to do it at this point.
It's now the Guardians thing.
So the lineup that has not been embargoed, and I can say and tell you guys, 8:10 is Ken Carmen, 8:20 is Anthony Lima. So back-to-back with the Morning Boys, and then Andy Baskin, 8:45. I'll be on at 9, Jeff Phelps at 9:20, and then Nick at 10 o'clock later on tonight. We'll find out what exactly happens. I think there are a couple interesting things I want to look forward to, though, Spencer. I think whether or not you have a tough early part of the schedule matters in a big time way for this Browns team. Think about it. If you have a really tough schedule out of the gate, does that change what you want when it comes to, I want Joe Flacco to be the starting quarterback, or I want Shedeur Sanders or Dylan Gabriel to be the quarterback when you're throwing a rookie into what then would be the Lions' den if, in fact, it is a tough opening part of the schedule?
I think it 100% changes the math. I think, on one hand, like, listen, if Shedeur or Dylan Gabriel earns the job and they're the better quarterback, they probably should play to start the year regardless of who the opponent is.
But you are setting them off in a bad light. Like, if it is a murderer's row, and I don't know, we don't have to go through teams and make up a random schedule. Or anything
well, we
like
know
that.
We know the one that's been put out by Jordan Schultz,
which
is
tough. The Bengals
they are
is already
opening
tough.
With the Bengals week one, which I don't know that either of us are worried about the Bengals from a defensive standpoint, but yeah, like trying to outduel Joe Burrow could get dicey. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, think about it again, just complete hypothetical. But if you go Bengals, and I don't know, let's say another team from the division is in there. Let's say week two is like the Ravens or something like that, and then you got I don't know, hard team like the Packers and then the Lions or something like that to start off. And then obviously you got the London Vikings game. Like that's a 5-week stretch that would be really, really hard on this Browns team. There's just no other way to look at it. And so you throw Flacco out there, let's say, and he struggles. and it doesn't go great, then it does give you the opportunity to almost pass the baton off to the rookie quarterback and set him up to succeed. Where if you throw someone like Shador or Dillon Gabriel out to the to basically be feasted on, if it is a tough schedule, well, that's got a chance to have the fan base really upset really early on. Could also knock the confidence of the young player as well.
Yeah, I think this is a very fair point. But I've been saying all along, though, like, I think the Browns have to start the season with one of these veterans because, A, they're going to have to go into the year selling the team on, we're at least going to try to be competitive. And I'm not saying that Shador, like listen, again, if Shador or Dillon Gabriel is, like, balling out during training camp, these players aren't stupid. They have eyes. They're going to sit there and be like, how can you not start this guy? The same way they knew that Deshaun Watson wasn't it for, like, 7 weeks last year, and they were all probably scratching their heads as to why Kevin Stefanski continued to say he gave them the best chance to win. They're not going to be stupid if they see these guys ball out and they're like, well, hey, why is Joe Flacco starting week one when these guys were better? But I think it's ultimately going to play out in a way where it's like, well, these guys are both a third round pick and a fifth round pick. You're not necessarily banking on them being amazing. Like, they're not guaranteed a franchise quarterback role like it would be if it was a first round pick. So I think they are going to sort of set themselves up to be like, hey, let's go veteran to start things off. Get everybody excited about the idea of like, hey, Joe Flacco's here. You saw him have success in this offense a couple years ago.
Yeah.
We're going to start this season, really try to go for it, try to win. And then like you said, by like week five, week six, if it's a tough schedule to open things up, now all of a sudden it's like, okay, it doesn't cost you anything just to pivot and be like, all right, we have two wins right now. We got to try something different. Let's go with Shador. Let's go with Dillon Gabriel.
So again, these are the little things. I think people always downplay and they're like, the schedule means nothing outside of travel plans. And I disagree completely. I think the schedule is a massive, massive thing. And like for some people that'd be like, oh, but the Browns aren't going to be good. The argument I would make back in return there is once J.J. McCarthy got injured last year, I think Vikings fans thought they weren't going to be very good either. But think about their schedule for a second. They ended the season against the Lions, drastically changed what their postseason ended up being, and changed the entire, not only trajectory, but what that season turned out to be, all based off of the idea that Vikings-Lions was the last game on the regular season schedule. And again, in a season that once J.J. McCarthy went down, Vikings fans thought would not matter at all. You have no idea what could potentially happen to this upcoming season. Maybe they have a Vikings-like season where it comes out of nowhere and you're surprised. And then who they play in December does matter. What type of primetime games they have does matter. Do they get any primetime games, all these things.
Well, short weeks, like if you play on a Thursday, like a short week
when's
game.
When's your bye, for instance? Yeah. Some of these other things. And we got to keep an eye on the bye, too, for when potentially they would change out quarterbacks as well.
Right. If the bye's early, that's always, people hate that because it's like, well, now you got to go, 12 straight weeks without.
If you have a bye in, let's say, week six after that London game or something like that, like that's a much different conversation than if it's week nine, let's say.
For sure. Yeah. There's always going to be flukiness to the schedule because, again, we take what last year's results were for a lot of these teams and say, well, this team's bad, this team's good. That's what the fun of the schedule game is, though, right? Like, well, wherever the New England Patriots are on the schedule, it's going to be like, well, the Patriots could be better, but, like, they're not really that good. Wherever the Titans are, it's going to be like, oh, the Titans, that's a winnable game, and we'll talk ourselves into why they're going to win that one. So there's always a little bit of flukiness of like, maybe Cam Ward actually makes the Titans good this year. Who knows? You can't predict everything that's going to happen with these teams. But I agree with you in that what we sort of envision these teams being does play a role in like where those games fall and how we like if you get a tough stretch where you're playing like gauntlet after gauntlet after gauntlet game, especially late in the year, right? Like if this team miraculously is in the hunt come December, you're not going to want to see on the schedule. Well, you're going to have the division teams in some capacity because they always do end with division games. But like, you're not going to want to see like Baltimore, Buffalo. Who else is really good that's on the schedule? The Lions. But you're not going to want to see that in December if you actually think this team has a chance to be in the hunt.
No question. And again, if you think the team is just going to be bad, then maybe you're like, all right, good. They loaded up at the back end.
Yeah, and then they can just finish out the season with like three wins.
And we can confirm that it's a three-win season, So there's a couple things there. Do you count the London game as a primetime game, or is that not anything for you? Because it's not a primetime slot.
It's not primetime for us.
It's definitely not primetime as far as the viewership is concerned either, but it is a standalone NFL Network game. Does that count or no?
I'm going to say no.
Okay, I also agree with no. So if we're playing with the idea that one doesn't count as a primetime game, are we expecting anything more? It's very hard to get shut out in the primetime game category. Yeah, that is the NFL telling you they flat out don't believe in you. They think that you stink, and they want nothing to do with you.
And this is a recent phenomenon too, because it used to be that like every team got a Thursday.
It was like making the All-Star game. Everyone got a representative.
Right. But
like,
then the first year though that Amazon had the games, and you had Al Michaels.
And then Al Michaels complained.
Al Michaels like sitting there being like, "Why am I calling this garbage game right now?"
This is why he complained. And you know what? Good on Al Michaels.
Right, right.
You might be falling asleep in the booth, but you got something right.
Amazon basically said, like, if we're going to have this partnership, you got to give us some actual games that people care about. And so they went away from that where everyone doesn't have to have Thursday night games now. I would be shocked, though, if the Browns don't end up with at least one Thursday night game. They're always good. Like, you can always do right by the NFL and the fans of this league. If you just throw, like, a random Brown Steelers game or like somebody in the division, it always makes sense to do it. And frankly, the Browns two primetime games last year were two of the better games they played all season.
They were the two of the most exciting games. Right about that.
So in that respect, I would think they get at least one, and I would think it would be on a Thursday. But I also saw a quote unquote leak that they are not on the Thursday night schedule this year. So that only really leaves Monday, because we know they're definitely not getting a Sunday night slot.
The flexing that is going to happen if Shador is great, and
that's the thing I want selfishly. I want at least one late in the year where Shador Sanders could be starting, because that feels like an easy storyline for the league to sell.
BetOnline.ag came out with their week one lines, by the way. We are 5-point dogs of the Bengals in week one.
Oh, Not as bad as I thought. You know football is close, JP, when we're already getting week one lines that we can talk about.
Absolutely love it. In case we missed it, next right here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.